I, with regard to the second assignment of error, I'd like to just rely upon my written argument with regard to that. Would like to concentrate on the first assignment of error.
With the first assignment of error, would you first focus on the waiver issue that the Commonwealth has presented on this, please?
With regard to Rule 5.8.18?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think that the Commonwealth's position is that that was waived with regard to, I'm not sure if the court is inquiring specifically about counsel not...
That there wasn't a true motion, and then, of course, that there wasn't any real ruling from the court on that as well. So kind of both of those.
Well, to begin, whether or not it was a true motion, I think that it was received by the trial court as a true motion. What happened during the during this colloquy was that Mr. Towns had some reservations with regard to counsel proceeding in this matter. Counsel had received a lab report within that the 10 days, and the reason why that was an issue is because there's obviously filing requirements. Mr. Towns had issues with that. Wanted to address those with the court, and he did so. But counsel's understanding of what Mr. Towns' original issues were that he wanted to proceed with different counsel, and he wanted to I believe that he wanted a continuance.
Well, Mr. Anderson, I don't know that whether you've seen this or not, but what month is this? Last month. We came out with an opinion, McGinnis versus Commonwealth. And in McGinnis, we specifically held that a defendant who is represented by counsel cannot file a motion on his own behalf. And it seems to me that that's pretty much what we've got here. While the defendant clearly has to personally waive a jury, a motion to revoke that waiver has to be filed. And even if you accept the I didn't want no bench as being a revocation, that was made by the defendant, not by counsel. So how do we get around McGinnis?
Well, Your Honor, unfortunately, I'm unfamiliar with McGinnis. But I would state that, and it's always been my opinion, that whether or not a defendant has a bench trial or a jury is ultimately up to the defendant.
That's the waiver. That's the first step. And clearly you're correct there. The defendant has to personally waive a jury. But I don't think the law is that the defendant has to personally revoke that. I think that's a motion made by counsel.
Well, whether or not counsel, again, not knowing the case law that you're referring to, I think that nonetheless it was received by the court because it was ruled on by the court.
Was it in fact ruled on by the court other than the court saying, well, previously, sir, you waived your right to a jury trial and then going on, I think, and asking counsel if they were ready for trial today?
Yeah.
Once the motion to continue was denied.
If counsel was otherwise prepared to proceed with trial, then at that point it suggests that the trial court did rule upon the motion by Mr. Towns. Mr. Towns, again...
And I guess the difficulty I have with that is if Mr. Towns can't make that motion himself and has to make it through counsel, what in effect was there for the court to rule upon?
Well, I'm not sure that I'd be able to address that. I think that...
You did present him to the court and said to the court he has a motion
to do,
or he has something he wants to say to the court, right? I'm trying to find in where you said exactly what your words were. You say that there's a motion for continuance. The trial court asks you about that, and I thought you said a motion for new counsel, and so... you ask for that, but then you sort of turn it over to the defendant and you say, you describe what his complaint was, but then you sort of turned it over to the defendant for him to say what he wants.
That's correct. Right?
So that's a little bit different than in the McGinnis opinion that we just put out.
That's
correct. He made a motion for new counsel, or you did it with him.
Well, this was a, when a defendant makes a motion for new counsel, obviously, I guess out of respect for that client, it would be his motion to make. And as part of all of this that's occurring, he's making these various motions at the time, right before we're set to go to trial. And
the trial court then does rule on the motion for the continuance and denies it, and then denies the motion for new counsel. And then he talks to the defendant, and the defendant says, I didn't want no bench, I want a jury, so I don't want to try to move forward on a bench. And the court says he has previously waived his right to a jury on August 26th. The Commonwealth says he waived his right to a jury on August 26th. And you say, when the court asks you, yes, sir, were you representing him then? Yes. Do you recall having previously given up your right to a jury trial, Mr. Townsend? I don't know. So that's kind of how it's left. And he just says, well, you waived it on August 26th. And so he sort of moves forward.
But sure. He just, on page 26, the trial court says, the court does not feel you've given adequate reason for either a continuance or withdrawal of counsel, so both motions are denied. Now, I know he effectively, he clearly didn't give him a jury. And I guess you could argue that the motion for the continuance subsumed the motion for a jury, because I doubt they had 20 people standing out in the hallway.
Well, that would be a presumption, though. That would not be contained in the record, and I think that would be a presumption that would be in violation of Coke's v. Commonwealth. Because in the Coke's case, I think the court's clear when it says that they're merely speculating with regard to whether or not that's reinstating a defendant's right to a jury would cause undue delay or impede justice. So,
on 27, the court says, all right, sir, you've previously waived your right or given up your right to a trial by jury, so we will proceed with the bench trial today as was requested back on August 26th.
Correct.
So is your argument that's a ruling then, or is
That would be a ruling, but I think that the trial court's response, when he comes back to counsel and asks, are you otherwise ready to go forward, that's certainly suggesting that he's made a decision with regard to whether or not he's willing to extend the jury right back to Mr. Towns. And with regard to are you otherwise ready to go forward, I think the trial court is addressing at that point the lab report and those issues that Mr. Towns had brought up with regard to that. So, as far as the preservation, clearly Mr. Towns had made the objection. That was overruled upon by the judge, and there's no evidence in the record of any undue delay or any impedance of justice, because there's nothing showing with regard to the number of witnesses that would have been misplaced with regard to continuing it. I think that there's some timing that's noted in the report or in the record, but with regard to that, it's 2:00. I've had juries that have gone into 10:30 at night. I don't know how the circuit court schedules their jurors, but certainly there's nothing within the record that's any evidence that a jury could not have been impaneled and one gone forward that evening.
The inference I'll give to the defendant's request was that he just received the lab analysis showing that his DNA wasn't on the gun and therefore changed his mind. That seems to be what I read into the record.
Yes, that it was a it's a beneficial report. It was something that counsel brought to the defendant the day after counsel received it that evening, and again that was within the 10 days of trial, and so that was part of counsel's concern. But nonetheless, Mr. Towns had concerns with representation and with going forward absent a jury. And, you know, it also can be, you know, Mr. Towns is addressing the lab report as well within his objection of going forward. And so at that point, and I know that perhaps this is reading more into the record that may not be contained, but that again is that would be new evidence that that I think would warrant a at least a reconsideration with regard to his jury trial waiver. If there's no other questions. I'm done with my initial argument.
All right. You have your rebuttal time. Good afternoon, Ms. Fitzgerald.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court in this case was never asked if the defendant could withdraw his jury waiver. There's no argument from counsel on this point, and there's no express ruling from the trial court on this point.
What about the statement by the trial court that Judge Beals mentioned? You have previously waived your right or given up your right to a trial by jury, and so we will proceed with a bench trial today. That sounds like a ruling.
Your Honor, the trial judge was never asked whether the defendant could withdraw that waiver. That statement that it was previously waived is a procedural statement.
So he was never asked to withdraw the waiver, but he clearly ruled on the defendant's request for a jury. He denied it.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that characterization. The trial judge was presented with two motions, the motion for new counsel and the motion for continuance. And the trial court ruled on two motions, and that's on appendix page 26. He says, okay, Mr. Towns, the court does not feel you've given adequate reason for either a continuance or withdrawal of counsel, so both motions are denied. And the trial court here was presented two motions, ruled on two motions, and that was all that was before the court.
So you're saying that that statement is more akin to the court just reciting the procedural history of the case?
Yes, Your Honor, that's my reading of the record. And again, if that was not correct, certainly we don't have an objection at that point or a motion for the defendant to withdraw his jury waiver. The trial court in this case never had an opportunity to intelligently consider whether or not this defendant should be permitted to withdraw that jury waiver.
Well, didn't the trial court pull I guess it was the proceedings, the record of the proceedings, reviewed it, verified that the defendant had in fact waived his right to a trial by jury, and then said that he couldn't withdraw it. I mean, it seems to me the trial court clearly understood what the defendant was requesting.
Your Honor, again, I would disagree. I don't believe that the court said he couldn't withdraw it. I think the court was, again, reciting the procedural history of the case. You appeared on this day with counsel, you waived your right on that day. Etc. There's no, and I won't let you go back on that, or any kind of further commentary there, merely just a recitation that this defendant had, in fact, with counsel, previously waived his right to a jury trial.
Do you agree that trial had not commenced at the time this colloquy occurred?
Yes, Your Honor.
So under our case law, Thomas Williams said where there's no showing that the granting the motion would unduly delay the trial or would otherwise impede justice, the motion is usually held to be timely. This is a timely. If it is a motion, it's a timely motion.
Yes, Your Honor, and of course my position would be that it wasn't a motion. And that's borne out, I think, by the fact that there's no discussion of any of those points. We don't have a record on this issue because the issue was never raised. The trial court and the Commonwealth neither had an opportunity
to
make a record on this issue.
Counsel, even if defendant, he sort of turned it over to defendant to make this request, if you will, to withdraw his waiver. It was incumbent upon counsel to give case law to the court to explain why, under these circumstances, he should be able to withdraw his waiver.
Two things, Your Honor. So my reading of the record is that the trial court addressed the defendant directly with respect to why the defendant wanted new counsel, why he was dissatisfied with his counsel. And after the defendant came up with a few reasons that the court rejected, the defendant blurts out, you know, I didn't want a bench trial there. So the court isn't engaging the defendant for purposes of, do you want to withdraw your jury waiver? This is all in the context of, do you want new counsel? So I think that to characterize that final statement as the defendant is acting pro se there, he's making his own motion, isn't reading the record fully in that context. And
and that's not defense counsel turning it over to his client for the purpose of saying, I don't want a bench trial either.
Correct, Your Honor.
Something that came out during the course of the exchange on the other issues.
Yes, and if it were the case that defendant did, in fact, you know, wish to withdraw that jury waiver when the court decided to move forward, certainly something could have been said at that point. You know, Your Honor, we need to honor this request. That we need a continuance because we need a jury trial. And at that point, there could have either been agreement by the Commonwealth that could be accommodated, or we could make a ruling.
But isn't this, you know, pretty much the reasoning that we used in McGinnis? And I don't know if you had an opportunity to review that case either, but the facts of McGinnis is a defendant is charged with larceny by worthless check. The check allegedly, and probably at least some of them, are given for past consideration, which is not covered by the statute. Nobody raised it at trial. In a motion to set aside the verdict, the defendant finally requests that he be acquitted based on that. We said, no, the defendant can't file a motion like that if he is represented by counsel. Seems to me that that's quite similar to the argument that you're making here, because the trial court really never had the opportunity to review the case law or hear argument on the legal issues involved. It's waived.
Yes, Your Honor, and I have not read the McGinnis opinion, but I was present when it was argued, actually. And I believe in that case, statutorily, right, the defendant can't file written motions without counsel's signature, and we did cite to that code section on brief. And I would also point the court to Townsend Spencer, which we cited, which talk about how the defendant's not entitled to hybrid representation. He's represented by counsel throughout these proceedings. It's counsel that has control of presentation to the court, and counsel who needs to be making these motions and letting the trial court know, when the defendant is seeking to withdraw his jury waiver, as opposed to a recitation of the history of this case.
If we disagree with that argument and conclude that McGinnis does not apply, and we get to the merits of this, what's your position on whether the trial court erred in refusing to allow him to withdraw his waiver?
I think under Cokes and under Williams, I would be bound to concede this record doesn't have sufficient information in it for the court to make that determination. I don't think that we have a record on...
And Cokes requires some indication in the record, right? That's how Cokes distinguishes itself from the Supreme Court's other opinions in Williams, for example.
Yes, Your Honor. And, of course, Cokes does say that it's just reiterating what it previously held in Williams, that it has to be apparent on the record. And whether that means the court has to make express fact findings is not entirely clear, right? Because it could be apparent on the record that the court thought this was for purposes of delay or many other reasons. Just the record in this case is so slim that I don't think in good faith I could make that argument here.
It's kind of hard to understand. He's indicted for an offense that carries a singular punishment, 5 years in the penitentiary. Mm-hmm. There's no options the jury could impose. It's hard to understand why one would not take a jury in a case like that, because you haven't got anything to lose.
Well, I think what he stands to lose is on the eluding offense, Your Honor, certainly.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
And not that we can retroactively look back at that in this manner, but the trial court did fully suspend all that time on the eluding offense.
He
got 5 years on...
Mm-hmm. He got the mandate.
The mandatory time on the firearms offense, yes, and then ultimately received suspended time. So, I would submit that the risk of the jury trial is the eluding offense, which is also an eluding that involves dangerousness. And if you've driven through traffic circles downtown, someone flying through a traffic circle is certainly concerning.
Entering the city limits of Richmond is dangerous.
So, yes. In McGinnis, and I realize, it's December opinion, you all have not had a chance to really delve into that, but in McGinnis, we do talk about it. You can't have hybrid representation. But there was an unpublished case called Chilton from 2001, I think, that we distinguish, even though we don't have to distinguish unpublished opinions, we did. And we said the case before us is distinguishable from the situation in Chilton in that appellant's motion to set aside the verdict and for a new trial, in this case, McGinnis, while indicating his unhappiness with the effectiveness of his court-appointed counsel, was not made jointly with a motion to appoint new counsel. Regardless, as noted, the Supreme Court has made clear in Spencer that no constitutional right to hybrid representation exists. So we sort of distinguish it. It's unpublished. It's not binding. We don't say that that is the test. We just distinguish it. So here, though, you did have a motion for new counsel, unlike in McGinnis.
And I would just disagree with the characterization that this is... I agree that there is a motion for new counsel here, but that the defendant was making a motion to withdraw his jury waiver, and that regardless of whether that was his intention, it's not what the trial court understood the issue to be. And the trial court needs to have an opportunity to intelligently consider this issue. And here, you know, what the trial court was presented with is not sufficient to enable the court to rule on that issue.
So basically, when just read again what Judge Petty and I just read to you.
Sure.
But on page 27 of the appendix, where the court says, all right, and sir, you have previously waived your right or given up your right to a trial by jury, so we will proceed with the bench trial today as we requested back on August 26th. Defense counsel ready to proceed, and Mr. Anderson says, yes, Your Honor, which, of course, you know, what do you say then? No, I'm not. Of course, he says, you know, yes, he's ready, so he shouldn't be penalized for that. But at the same time, is your argument that he should have said, I am, Your Honor, but... I don't think, you know, you've ruled on the motion to withdraw the waiver, and I think you have to allow him to do that under Copes and whatever.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that it's a difficult position for trial counsel to be in, certainly also when your client is speaking in court and the judge is ready to proceed with the trial. However, if the defendant is seeking a jury trial, I think what needs to happen there is to say that what often happens in these cases where a defendant is seeking a continuance that counsel is not joining in to say, you know, I'm otherwise ready to proceed. I'm ready to try this case to a bench trial. However, my client is seeking to withdraw his jury waiver, you know, at this time or words to that effect. I think the trial court needs to be made aware that this is a true motion and that this is the defendant's actual wish at this point in the proceedings. Because it's not clear from this record that the trial court understood what was being asked for was a withdrawal of that jury waiver.
And it was only made by the defendant. It was not made by counsel at all, right?
Yes, that's my reading of the record.
Okay, I'll ask Mr. Anderson that too.
Sure. There it is. So again, they're focusing on what the trial court had before it, what the court had ruled expressly on those two motions that were presented by counsel. And it's my reading of this record that those were the only two issues before the court at that time. I'd ask the court to find this issue procedurally defaulted. And I'd be happy to answer questions on the eluding offense, but since counsel has rested on his brief, I'm happy to do that as well.
Further questions for Ms. Fitzgerald?
Thank you. I'd ask you here first.
Thank you, Ms. Fitzgerald. Mr. Anderson, you have your rebuttal time. And can you sort of be thinking, I would like to pose that same question to you because, I understand you're in an awkward position there. He's making a motion. He's asking for a new attorney, which is not any reflection on you, but just he is making that request, and he's asking for continuance, which you've presented to the court, that he's going to do both of these or that it's being done.
Yes, sir.
But where do you really say, and by the way, he wants to withdraw his jury trial? He wants a jury trial here.
Are you're asking when would I...
When did you say that or give the court any indication of that? Because you did with the other two things.
Well, I believe that the court did rule with regard to the jury trial waiver at that point.
Because he made it?
During this whole colloquy, this colloquy begins with Mr. Towns' requests. And at that point, he's making a request for new counsel. And so at that point, it's difficult for me to sort of get involved with regard to that.
What about when you're asked if you're otherwise ready to proceed? Why not at that point say, well, Your Honor, my client has indicated that he at this point would like to exercise his constitutional right to a trial by jury and withdraw his waiver, and as such, I would accordingly move that his waiver of the right to trial by jury be withdrawn?
Because at that point, it was clear to me that that the trial court judge had ruled on the request with regard to the new counsel, with regard to the continuance, and with regard to the jury.
And with regard to both the new counsel and the continuance, the judge affirmatively denied those, correct?
Yes, but when
he... with the statement, I don't want no bench, all the court said was, sir, you previously waived your right to a jury trial, so we'll proceed with the bench trial.
Right, but with regard to the response, with regard to the continuance, I don't think it's a stretch to conclude that that would also include a jury. Whether or not a jury was going to be impaneled that day, or what more oftentimes occurs, the court will reschedule for a jury. It would be on defendant's motion.
But the motion for continuance is often made with a motion for new counsel to give, you know, if I'm not going to be representing him, then somebody else is going to need to get up to speed and be appointed. So why couldn't the court have thought, quite legitimately, the motion for continuance is related to the motion for new counsel, not some sort of motion? Because he raises this, I didn't want a bench, I want a jury. He's doing that in answer to the court pressing him about, so what's the problem with your counsel giving you notice of a plea possibility? He's got a duty to do that. So what's the problem with him telling you about the plea? And that's when he comes out with, I don't want a bench trial, I want a jury trial.
Well, I think that Mr. Towns at that point is addressing the his concerns with regard to the lab reports, whatever those may be.
And arguably he's getting a little bit of static from the judge at that point, so then he decides that he doesn't want a bench trial because that judge has given him a little flack.
Well, I don't know I suppose that could be a reading.
But it appears to otherwise come out of nowhere. There was no indication that he wanted a jury trial.
That would be, I would have to concede with regard to that. It does appear to come out of nowhere.
And the record would indicate that, because you're being very forthright with the court. You're like, look, you know, he wants a new lawyer, he wants a continuance, but you don't say anything. And obviously I'm not asking about what you and your counsel, your client say to each other, obviously not. But you don't put anything on the record about a jury waiver.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, I would have to comment with, you know, about my conversations
with
the counsel.
Never ask you about that, of course. But I'm just trying to look at the record and see what would the trial judge have thought. Does he think he has a motion or request that he has to rule on here? Because he so clearly ruled on the other two.
Well, I think he clearly ruled with regard to the jury trial request. I think that he. I think his referring back to the earlier transcript or the earlier ruling about the waiver is clearly analyzing that and taking into consideration that this was something that was decided upon at an earlier date and it is being changed at this point.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, we will greet counsel.